Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Dope Black Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another Dope Black Dad podcast. Okay, today I'm joined by Timmy, Mr. Money Jar. Okay, he is an award-winning financial expert and content creator, author, and also founder of a UK-based financial education company by the name Mr. Money Jar, which offers practical financial guidance. He hosts the Mr. Money Jar Show, a weekly podcast. I believe they're on like 100 podcasts at the moment, which is so cool. And he's an ambassador for a charity that promotes the importance of financial literacy and creates educational content, which is called the National Numeracy. So, Timmy, how you doing, my man?
I'm good. You've left me with nothing left to say. Thank you.
No, don't worry. I'll definitely bring it out of you. So I'll get your journey out of you, basically. We'll start with that, actually. So how did your journey into being a financial educator kind of start?
It started with curiosity. There are lots of different moments, but one that really stands out to me is my first job out of uni was at a financial PR company, and they changed pension providers, and they sent an email out to everyone, and they were moving from, I think it was like Scottish Widows to Hargreaves Lansdown, who actually I still like invest with them to this day. And a lady came in to talk to us and was like, you know, you need to invest in your pension. You can pick the risky, the medium, or the cautious one. And I asked her, like, which thing should I put my pension in? I didn't know that much about pensions. And she was like, I can't tell you what to invest in because I'm not a financial advisor. I remember thinking, like, this is really strange that my pension is something very important, but I have no idea how it works, no idea, like, what to do with it. But this is money that I'm going to have to use when I retire. So I went on a massive personal development journey. I read a ton of books. I read something like 35 books in 2017, 2016 times. A lot of them on finance. I watched YouTube videos. I listened to podcasts. And once I got to a point where I felt like I was reading and seeing the same things over and over again, I then made a page of my own. This was in 2019. To share what I'd learned, essentially. And the journey kind of began from there. 2019 was cool. I did in-person meetups, the Money Jar meetup, shout out anyone who came to those. But lockdown was when things really started to kick off because everyone was at home. People were experiencing myriad financial situations. And there was this huge hunger to learn about
crazy,
money.
Crazy. That's quite nuts for me specifically, how I can relate to this is because during my kind of lockdown time, I was put on furlough and I've always been hugely passionate about money. And I actually started, while I've been traveling, I started my RO1 exams. So I was like really trying to get into the whole financial advisor stuff. So very similar. Like I was just curious. I was like, I've got a good pension. What do I do with my pension? How can I maximize this? So very, very similar, actually, which is quite cool.
Yeah. If you don't mind me asking, I don't know if the people at home will have the video feed on this. Is that a wedding ring you're wearing?
Oh, no way. That's pretty cool.
You have a black wedding ring.
Yeah, and it lights up.
Is it titanium?
Well, which is quite cool. And it's sunny.
I
didn't want anything like brass or gold or anything like that. I was like, keep it black, blacked out everything. Is yours a wedding ring?
Yeah. I got married last August. Just celebrated my first year wedding anniversary. Marriage, obviously very beautiful. Love my
She's
wife
behind
very
the camera,
much. But
isn't she?
A lot of stuff to do with finance on that. So yeah, paying me to say everything I'm saying.
No, that's so cool, my man. But you know, that is very interesting for you, kind of start with your journey. And a question that I kind of wanted to ask was, obviously, because you've now known a bit more about the kind of finance, definitely a lot more than I do on the whole financial side of things. Do you feel like financial literacy is starting to become a real big talking point? Obviously, with, you know, interest rates rising and everything that's happening in the UK, I'm starting to hear a lot more people talk about it. Or do you think it's still quite, it needs to be talked about more?
I think people are talking about it, and I think people are talking about it the right amount. However, I noticed this trend taking place from way before the cost of living crisis. It was the pandemic that where I really saw that shift. Before the pandemic, there was a lot of interest in your classic stuff, like increasing your income and investing and stuff. But it was during the pandemic and lockdown when I saw people, you know, people realize that, you know, you could lose your job, but you need to have an emergency fund saved. I remember when I was younger, the idea of having savings for apparently no reason was really alien to me. And then we got to the pandemic and I was like, okay, no, I need to have an emergency fund. I need to have money just in case my situation changes. Because as we saw, people who made plans in January 2020, by March, April 2020, those plans weren't going to happen anymore. And I think that the cost of living crisis, the squeeze that we're seeing on energy bills, on groceries, petrol, that sort of thing, has just intensified what the pandemic started. And I think that that's happening on both sides. So on the consumer side, people are really interested in financial education and how they can manage their money better, save, invest, pay off debt and so on. But also on the creator side, on the educator side, you're seeing lots of people come forward with their own lived experiences and their own take on financial education. And so in kind of spring 2020 time, you're getting all this boom of people like myself creating pages, creating platforms, many of which still exist now, of people sharing their experience and their expertise.
What would you say is kind of the biggest contributor to people starting to be, you know, talking about financial literacy? Because obviously now the terminology is being more widely used. It's not kind of like a hearsay. And it's so crazy for me because I've only started learning it kind of like over the last 2 years. And obviously I'm like in my 20s. I'm not going to say my full age. I'm 20 years young is what I say to people.
All right.
Exactly.
I'm 30 years young.
So I'm hearing kids like just coming out of uni talking these terms. And I'm just like, what? How are they knowing this kind of stuff already? Do you think that's going to help with the situation?
Yeah.
Is that enough to know, you know, the different terms and what they mean? Or is there more that needs to be done?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me answer your questions in order. So you said, what do we think is driving this? I think it's the internet and social media. I think social media is just a tool. It's like a massive amplification megaphone for what people are already doing. So if people were showing off back in the day, then social media just allows you to show off 10 times more. If people were like connecting back in the day, then social media allows you to connect with people all over the world. Equally, social media is this really amazing tool that enables people to teach really large audiences of people, but also enables people to learn as well. And there are so many platforms with so many different formats that you can learn from. So if you want to read blogs, if you want to watch videos, long form, short form, if you want to listen to podcasts, there's a different platform, a different format to suit everyone. And it's really interesting because I got started investing when I was in my 20s and there wasn't all of this media circulating. And I had to make do with books, a lot of which were geared towards an American audience. Everything was in dollars. And I'm really, really happy now to see that there's a lot more stuff in pounds and pence and a lot more stuff focusing on UK issues. You know, when you're talking about things like taxes and investments, you can learn so much from the US experience, but we have completely different tax and investment rules in this country. And then on the second question about whether, you know, more needs to be done and so on. I think it's very much a journey. I still learn new things about finances every day. The thing I like to say is that personal finance is personal. So every single conversation I have with someone about their money is a learning opportunity for me because no two situations
are the same. Is there anything that you've noticed kind of as a common theme when you're speaking to people about their personal finances at the moment? Like common struggles or...
Yeah, what people are trying to find out is normally very outcome based. If I could use an analogy, it's like if I wanted to learn how to cook something and I went on YouTube, I would Google the recipe and then I'll watch the video along to see how to do it. Or another random example, like the other day, my toilet flush button broke. So I had to like Google how to find out how to fix that. People approach finances in a very similar way. So it's like, how can I get out of debt? I've never invested before. How can I invest for the first time? How do I save towards a house? It's very informational, very outcomes driven. And people want to get to the core of the issue straight away. I think that that's what's enabled me to build my platform, because I try to break things down and make them as accessible as possible in as short a time as possible. Back when Instagram used to be a photo sharing app, RIP those times, it was with infographics. Now it's short form videos that I do that with. And what's it? So like getting on the property ladder, paying off debt, investing, budgeting is another big one that people are really interested in. So that's quite interesting for me
because I don't know if you know, but I'm traveling at the moment. So I'm going to be going back to the UK and hitting this storm that's hitting at the moment. So I'm a bit nervous myself. But where was I going? Yeah, so with the kind of UK situation as it is right now, what area of their finance do you think people should be focusing most on? Is it budgeting? Should they still be worrying about trying to get on the property ladder? Or is it different for everyone? How does it kind of work?
It is different for everyone. But what I will say is, against the backdrop of the cost of living crisis and rising prices, it is a crisis. And it's a crisis that has required government intervention and will require more government intervention. So they've announced up to £1,200 of support for the most vulnerable households. Liz Truss has just capped energy bills at £2,500 a year for 2 years, starting in October. But things that we can do on our side, it really does come back to the basics when you're talking about things like your bills. So it's taking stock of your finances. I went from budgeting monthly to budgeting weekly a couple months ago because I realized that the monthly, looking at my finances once a month on the day I got paid, just wasn't often enough. You know, you're leaving 30-day periods between to go, oh, that's how much I spent. The thing is, you're spending money every single day, multiple times a day. So I've been looking at it every week, and that's been really useful for me. Being super ruthless in terms of, you know, bills and stuff that I'm paying for, making sure that money isn't leaking out of my bank account. I think that for people who are able to, they will want to look at increasing their income. So like doing a side hustle or seeing if they can get a pay rise at their job. It really does come back to people's individual situations. But I think the cost of living crisis is very like survival based. It's kind of affecting people, the bottom layer of people's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And so I imagine most people right now are focusing on the basics.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's quite interesting, obviously, I don't know how you do it in your household, obviously. Me and my wife have very different mindsets on money, which kind of complements each other really well. How have you managed to do that? Because I think, obviously, if you're in a situation where, you know, you and your partner are both going through this crisis at the same time, your emotions are quite high. How do you have those conversations that are necessary to survive this crisis, basically?
So I think increasing the frequency with which we talk about things has really helped with me and my wife. So we have a set day of the week, a set time of the week where we both agree to do our life admin, and it involves our budgets and money and stuff, but it's also like we'll look at our calendar, we'll look at our to-do list, and it's become a really important part of our week to just sit down and have this chat. We've actually noticed that on weeks where we do it on a Sundays where we've been busy, the following week has actually been really rubbish because we've not had that chat and like shared our understandings. I also think that if you have a different approach to planning and to finances than your partner, to your point, it can be a strength. You know, I'm really comfortable with spreadsheets. I will sit down and, you know, balance the books for fun. My wife doesn't really care about that, but she's really good at planning into the future and thinking about things, because my brain isn't so good at processing future events. I'm kind of like in the here and now, but she's really good at thinking, she's a project manager, so kind of figures, and looking into the future and going, what if this happens, then this will happen. And then we can come together and sync on those. You don't need to be too different, though. I mean, that it can, the difference can also cause, conflict as well. So if you have someone's really frugal and another person who just wants to spend all their money, then that can cause issues. But hopefully that's, an aspect of your compatibility with one another that you've kind of figured out by the time.
No, of course, definitely relate with that. My wife's quite laid back and chilled. She's like, Cameron, you just go about it. So if she heard, we have to now look at budgeting weekly, she'd be like, not a chance. Even though she has got the time to, she'd rather watch some kind of Netflix program, whatever it is. So yeah. I'm very much like you. I love my spreadsheets, Google Sheets and Excel, all of that I live by. But for someone who isn't so much into budgeting, because I know some people don't like it. Why, I don't know. How would someone regularly look at their finances on a weekly basis?
Yeah. Well, I must admit that, I use the word budget. I do understand that this is a word that turns a lot of people off. In fact, they hear the first syllable of the word and they're already like asleep. So try not to focus on the word budget or the connotations of the word budget. You can call it a spending plan. You can call it a money management session. You can call it looking over your finances. To reason by analogy, if you tried to go about your day without ever checking the time, let's say you have like a day that's full of meetings, you're going to see friends, you got to go to a dinner or something, you got to catch a train, plane, whatever. If you tried to do all this stuff without checking your watch once, without checking your calendar once, you're going to miss stuff. You're going to turn up late to stuff. You're not going to know where you are. You're basically looking at the sun and guessing that it's 4 p.m. and then you're going to turn up at the thing and the thing's already happened. It's a very similar thing with your money. Our brains aren't wired to understand how money works in hard terms, a very abstract concept. And so checking your finances, and you can do this really simply by either using one of the app-only banks, which will break down all your spending for you and categorize it and stuff, or you can use a budgeting app. I use Money Dashboard, for example. It's free desktop app, mobile app, and just look at your finances. Look at the last 7 days. Make a plan for the next 7 days. You're doing a very similar thing to checking your watch or checking a calendar. It's just with your money. You don't want to go in blind to something like this, because even though I work in the financial education space, I still make all of the same mistakes that your average person will make. If I'm on a night out and we're having fun, yes, I'm tapping away. I have subscriptions that I've maybe forgotten about. I overspend from time to time, which is why, if you know the amount of times I've deleted and reinstalled the Amazon app from my phone and delivery app and stuff. But the difference between you and the next person is going to be your ability to sit down and look at your finances and make, tweaks. That's the only difference. We're all human.
I can so relate to that. I started deleting all my Amazon apps and all that kind of stuff. And I've just started installing it because I'll be going back to the UK soon. And I'm like, oh, I can already feel the pull of all these different things. So I can 100% relate to that. Yeah. And in terms of like this, talk more specific to kind of like, Black minorities and stuff. Do you feel like we've taken a bigger hit than other minorities or other people at all? Or do you think it's just straight up everyone in the UK is just getting hit stupidly hard?
Well, Runnymede Trust did that really groundbreaking study in 2020, where they found that for every £10 of household wealth, white Brits had, African and Caribbean Brits had, I think it was 10 and 20p, respectively. Yeah, relatively speaking. And they visualize it by showing a stack of 10 £1 coins for the white Brit. And I think for the Indian Brits, it was 9 £1 coins. And then you got to the end, it was Bangladeshi, African Brits and Caribbean Brits with the lowest shares of wealth. So I think when you look, the cost of living crisis is a macro issue. But then if you have people in society who have a lower share of household wealth, lower share of income, it's going to affect them more as well. But I think that with this, so the crisis is going to affect them more. But I can certainly remember from my upbringing that having less can be a strength. It can make you more resourceful. It can mean that when you're working with less, it means that you have your eye on it more because every penny counts. So I think to the people that are struggling the most, this is definitely a time to be kind to yourself. As I've said already in this conversation, it's a crisis. It's not something that, you know, a few tips or tweaks here and there can fix. And to look for the help that is available. A charity I've been working with this year called Turn to Us. It's a financial support charity. They have an excellent page of resources on their website about cost of living help that you can access. And they have a benefits calculator as well, which is a bit like a type form, I guess, where you can put in your circumstances, your details about your household, and then they will let you know the benefits that you're entitled to. Don't feel bad asking for help as well. There's something like 15 billion pounds of unclaimed credits in the UK at the moment. And a lot of that's to do with the stigma of seeking out help, but the help is there. So
yeah, I completely agree. I remember seeing that stat as well about the amount of unclaimed benefits. And yeah, there is this huge stigma attached to being on benefits, which I don't think is a bad thing, especially during a crisis. Like everyone's kind of feeling that hit. Yeah. So it should be something like if you're struggling, do what you need to do to live and support your family rather than trying to be proud and keeping your ego and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, I can 100% relate with that.
Yeah, and I think it's stigma, but I also think it's awareness, yeah. You know, like knowing what your rights are, knowing what your entitlements are. And rather than come on here and reel off a long list of like the entitlements and the dates and this, that and the other, I think if you do anything, do an internet search for Turn to Us benefits calculator and see what you're entitled to. When it comes to energy bills as well, I actually received an email from my energy provider this week saying that there's help available for customers if they're struggling with their bills. And they might be able to give you, you know, a grant if you're struggling with your bills, payment holidays, discretionary credit. Again, speak to your providers to see what you're entitled to.
What stops someone wealthy from, using those benefits? Like, are they vetting this process? Or is it something that some people could take advantage of if they're not feeling the squeeze as much as others?
This is a process, I believe, that's being vetted. You say that you're struggling with your bills, they might even put you on a prepayment meter.
Okay. That does make it a lot more helpful, to be honest. So a couple of other topics I wanted to just kind of speak of based off what we've kind of been talking about. I remember you saying like when you started out learning about finance, because I think that is a huge part of this is keeping yourself in the awareness of what's happening in kind of the financial industry and the literacy side of things, knowing what words mean and, oh, what's this about? And just being curious. I remember when I first started out, like you said, it was a majority of kind of like white Americans who were just saying the American story. And I've started to see this shift of not just like UK people talking about stuff, but black UK people coming about it. Do you feel like there still needs to be more push from like huge media sources on the availability of these kind of like UK, I'm not going to say financial advisors, but UK people talking about financial education?
What do you mean?
When I was looking for, I was really struggling to find UK information, like you said, like the tax stuff and the benefits and knowing that, all that kind of stuff. My main source was obviously like your YouTube and your TikTok and your Instagram for the kind of younger generation. And I feel like in terms of, especially during this crisis, and me not being in the UK, I'm not too sure if this is the case, but I don't feel like the media, they're just focusing on the problem rather than offering people, or have a look at this, this person's doing this. There's more like scaremongering rather than here's what you could do. Do you see what I mean?
Right. All right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the media is going to do what the media is going to do, right? I think that you've got traditional media, which is like news and broadcast and TV and stuff. And if you feel like you're just seeing a lot of scaremongering and so on, then, you know, listen to the Dope Black Dads podcast. This is media. To use social media platforms and listen to voices that you trust. A lot of financial educators are very happy to highlight educators that they are also fans of, and that they follow and learn from. And, finding trusted voices is about looking at people who've been, it's not just about followers, but it's looking about like people that have been at this for a while. If we go to my page, you can see years and years of, you know, information and kind of things that I've been sharing. So it wasn't like a kind of a fad for me. It's something that I'm very dedicated to. But I think that with education, there is an extent to which it is on you to seek out the information for yourself. I don't mean to get, particularly when it comes to money, I don't mean to get conspiratorial on the podcast, but it's a very competitive consumer economy that we live in. There's very little benefit to the people who have lots of money to teach people who don't have money how to manage and invest it. And I think, you know, they just want us to consume. They want us to buy things because that's what keeps the system going. Eat out to help out was about, you know, consumption, you know? So there is an extent to which if you're seeking financial education stuff, it is going to be on you to a certain extent to seek out and find voices that you trust and that you want to listen to.
I completely agree. I've always been hugely passionate about finance, and yeah, I think it is a thing where in a time of a crisis, it can be very easy to instantly start pointing fingers. And I think the blame game kind of needs to be there, but it needs to be put on chill, and everyone needs to kind of start focusing on, all right, how can we try and get out or survive this crisis? Because ultimately it's here now, and we need to start working towards doing something to get out of it and surviving it. So completely can relate. And for those who are starting to, because I've got a couple of friends, before I did this podcast, I was asking them a couple of questions on what they would want to hear from you and how they're feeling, because obviously I'm not in the UK at the moment.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot of them said where they had, you know, been being smart and saving their money aside, investing it or whatever they were doing, that squeeze is starting to happen. And they're now starting to live paycheck to paycheck. So mentally, they're like, yeah, I want to invest. Yeah, I want to grow and all of this stuff. But the situation is the situation. So what kind of advice would you give to someone who is living paycheck to paycheck where they don't have anything they can save?
So we've touched upon it as well. It's about increasing your income and reducing your expenses as much as you possibly can. A way to increase your income is to take advantage of benefits that you're entitled to. So we've already talked about that. in terms of reducing your expenses, again, we've spoken about it. You do need to take stock. Have a look at how much you've got going out on a weekly basis, if you can. Cancel any bills and subscriptions you're not using. Something that I've been doing when I've been shopping, I'm assuming the people you're speaking about aren't the most vulnerable of households because they were thinking about things like saving and investing and stuff. I'll be in the supermarket and there was like one time when I like picked up like a branded like milk product, and then I was in the queuing up, and then I kind of noticed that the own brand product was right there and it was half the price. I was like, what am I doing? And I went and I put back the branded product and picked up the own brand product. So I've been downgrading in terms of some of the things that I've been paying for. And these little things do add up, definitely. But then I also think, because I don't want to trivialize the crisis, that for this period that we're in, it is a difficult period. And if you're living paycheck to paycheck during a crisis, then don't judge yourself for that, because it is a crisis at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that's quite an interesting take on it, actually, to kind of like downgrade your lifestyle for the period to kind of keep yourself afloat and not feeling like there's a shame to it. Is that what you're kind of touching upon?
I think so. And we need only look at the government's response to see that it is very serious. You've got like billions of pounds worth of support being announced for individuals and for businesses and stuff, and payments being made to people, because that's the nature of the that highlights the seriousness of the problem, essentially. And I see a lot of conversations around, well, if you just do these things, then you'll be able to get yourself out of this. This is a generational issue, you know. We have a rise in electricity and in energy costs because of, firstly, the aftershocks of COVID. So we're still trying to deal with the pandemic. There's the war in Ukraine, which has meant that people that we were previously relying on energy supply for, like Russia, for example, we now don't rely on them, which means that the remaining energy on the market is more expensive. And we also have several years worth of the UK not being self-sufficient as a country. You know, we could have built nuclear plants and so on. And we've relied on other countries for energy. So this is a long-term problem as well. You know, we need to become a country that is more able to rely upon itself. We need to have economic growth to get out of this situation ultimately. And then all we're doing in between is just making sure that people can meet their monthly expenses. And I think that's appropriate and that's okay.
Do you feel like that might bite us in the bum in the future? Like all this kind of support coming from the government now, like here's some money for it. Do you think either ourselves or future generations are going to have to pay up for that in the future?
It depends on where the support is coming from. The current policies that are being announced are being funded by borrowing, which means that, yes, we will probably have higher taxes in the future to pay for it. So Conservatives, you know, Liz Truss has actually said that she doesn't want to tax companies at all. I don't agree with this. I think if you've got energy suppliers literally saying we have more money than we know what to do with, then it's appropriate to expand a windfall tax on them, or to do a windfall tax at all, particularly if the reason why they have record profits isn't because they've been doing anything different. It's just simply because the prices have been higher. So I think that also speaks to being more politically engaged, doing things like writing to your MP and paying attention to what decision makers are doing and saying, like voting. You know, voting in the people that you want to create policies that represent you and that you support. I historically haven't been that politically engaged. For example, during Brexit, I didn't really read the news that much. I didn't really know that much about what was going on in politics. And to an extent, I'm kind of happy about that because I think I would have been miserable.
Yeah.
But once it got to the pandemic and I realized that, oh, wow, like the people who make the rules can literally tell you to stay inside and only leave for your 1 hour of exercise or whatever, that's when I started to really pay attention to what was going on in government and stuff. So we're in the situation we're in now, but if we want things to be different, then we need to vote in the people that we think represent us, rather than just being apathetic about it or succumbing to inertia and just being like, yeah, they'll just do what they're doing, I'm doing what I'm doing. No, like, your vote, your opinion matters.
What about if you're like, because for myself, I've not been too into the kind of politics side of things, like how you were previously. And that's mainly because a lot of the times I'll look at like multiple parties. And I'm like, well, I agree with that, but I don't agree with that. And I agree with that, but I don't agree with this. And it's like, well, I don't agree with your full situation. I feel no matter what way I go, it's kind of like a double-edged sword. I've always felt like what kind of needs to happen is there needs to be more people entering into politics who have more of a certain vision where like, how do I explain it? So someone will kind of see people in politics and go, well, I don't agree with what this person's doing. I don't agree with this person's doing. Okay, then get into politics. Like, do you feel like there needs to be more fresh faces in politics? Is that even possible?
I completely agree with that. I think it's a really good point. I think that one of the side effects of like capitalism is that it can kind of make you feel like a small cog in this massive machine, and that your individual actions don't matter. Mm. Like, you work in a massive company and it's just your job to work on this one document and then to send it to someone. Or you're just one consumer among millions of consumers who exist solely to drive up the share prices of a company or make, you know, the top 1% rich. But I do believe that everyone is special. Everyone has something to offer. And you could, you know, you can have an idea in your head about something, but you can also make it happen as well. Mm. If it's what you really want to do and you have the time to dedicate towards it. I fully believe that. So if there's people out there who want to go into politics, like, definitely do that. If you think it's your area and you're passionate about it, because you could be the person to change things around for this country. You could be the person that's a role model to people, that people look at and go, yeah, I want to vote for that person. So yeah, it's a two-pronged thing, isn't it? It's about us people on the ground making our voices heard and voting, but it's also about people stepping forward to be leaders as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this, I say the same thing to people about, it's not like entirely related, but like, I guess it sort of is. I say the same thing to people about like business. Like, if you have an idea that you think will help people and that you think can make money, like, try it. I've been in business, been running my business by next month, October, it'll be 3 years. It'll be the longest job I've ever had. And if I'd said to any of my friends 5 years ago that I was going to be a content creator in 2022, I talk less of them laughing at me. I would have laughed at myself. I wouldn't have thought that it was possible. But it's like time plus effort, like being in it to win it. It really works. People are far more powerful than they think.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Like, since doing my travels, I've obviously seen one side of the world and seeing how we've kind of worked. I'm in Bali at the moment. And one thing that I find really interesting is the UK renowned, I just feel like the kind of like generation we are in, they're very hungry to do well. But they've always had this stigma attached where they don't like politics. Everyone in the UK doesn't respect people like the prime ministers, and they're just always being laughed at, or there's some kind of meme happening at someone. There's always that stigma attached to it. Whereas out here in Bali, they're very laid back and chilled. They're on an island. I get it, obviously. But they're incredibly respectful to their prime minister. They've got like kings and queens of different areas. And I think there kind of needs to be a beautiful mix between the two, where we can kind of still be, yeah, you know, hardworking and hungry to do well, but also respecting leaders. And I think that also does put a bit of pressure on leaders to do stuff that's going to make them respected. And also people go into leadership positions where they will be respected because their views are from what the people want, rather than just kind of like some huge keeping votes and all this kind of stuff. So I can see the mix, yeah, between the two, definitely. Another topic I kind of wanted to speak on, obviously, like you mentioned, you just recently got married, so congratulations on that. And obviously, you've had a crisis happen around about the same kind of time. So a lot's happening around your life. So what was your kind of mindset and tips you were doing when you were kind of going through saving for your wedding and all this kind of stuff? while going through or just about hitting into a crisis and all that? Was it kind of tied in?
So by the crisis, do you mean the pandemic?
Yeah.
Well, we had a pandemic wedding. It was only 12 people. And we haven't done a follow-up bigger event yet. So yeah, 12 people, obviously a lot more easy to pay for and cater to everyone when it's just that. It was just siblings and parents. And we were in that weird part of the pandemic where we weren't necessarily sure when we were going to get out. And we thought, rather than put it off and put it off, potentially, not indefinitely, but you know, just like for a period of time that we don't know, let's just do something now. So in a way, the pandemic kind of helped us with that. What we did put a lot of money into, and something that we are very happy that we did, was into marriage counselling. We got marriage counselling very, very early on, with a fantastic service called Relate, and it was online. And we simply, you know, we wanted to go into marriage with a good dose of humility and just recognize that there was a coin toss in whether our marriage would survive or not, right? It's like, I think the percentage is on like 42% of marriages end in divorce, but that's just the people who could or could be bothered to get divorced.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of people who are married who are like obviously not happy as well. And we didn't want to go into it going, yeah, that wouldn't be us, because I don't actually believe anyone. Or I think the majority of people who get married don't go into it with the intention of getting divorced. And we learned a lot of life-changing lessons during the counseling, which helps us to this very day. Just means that we're singing from the same hymn sheet. So when we encounter certain situations or certain issues, we can refer back to what we learned rather than just freestyling it, which is what a lot of us are doing with relationships. When you really consider the fact that no one actually teaches you how to select a partner, no one actually teaches you the enormity of marriage, and you're basically modeling off what your parents' relationship was like, TV, films, and possibly like music as well. That's terrifying. That's like giving a bunch of young people cars with no driving lessons. Like, there's going to be, half of them are going to crash, right? So we got that counseling. And if I can I share like the thing that we learned that was
100%.
Yeah. So the thing that we learned is that you can't actually love anyone else until you love yourself. And I'd heard about this concept over the course of my life, but I didn't properly understand it. And the way that our counselor broke it down was that when you're a child, you rely on the love of other people to survive. We're what's called an altricial species, altricial, hope I've pronounced that right, which means that we're born prematurely relative to other species. Comedian Michelle Wolf has a really funny bit about how when a giraffe is born, the mum just kind of like walking and the baby giraffe falls out, and then she looks back and is like, get up, come with me. But human beings require a period of at least 10 years where you can't really do anything for yourself. And so your parents' love is a life or death issue. You need someone to love you, feed you, clothe you, care for you, put a roof over your head. Otherwise, we'd be dead. None of us would be alive anymore. And part of growing up is about learning how to clothe yourself, how to feed yourself, how to brush your own teeth, but also how to love yourself. You need to learn how to give yourself the love that your parents used to give you. But a lot of us don't do that. We get to a point where, you know, I don't think my parents are cool anymore. So I'm now going to seek the love of my friends. Mm. I'm going to seek the love of that person there that I want to date. I'm going to seek the love of the crowd. So I'm going to get a nice car, a fancy job, nice clothes. And this love is never going to be enough, because life is long and people are disappointing. You need to learn to love yourself first. Accept yourself. Once you can do that, once you fit your own oxygen mask first, you are then in a position to show up to someone complete, whole and happy and love them. And so once we realized that it wasn't our job to fix each other and to like make each other happy and to to do all of that, and we should actually be focusing on ourselves, our relationship became much, much happier, much, much more, we were much, much more in sync with each other, and we were able to present ourselves to each other as our best selves.
Mm. When you got married, did you feel like you were ready, you're kind of like, you knew how to love yourself, or do you feel like marriage counseling helped you kind of just fix those last steps so you could love yourself and just strengthen that marriage? Or how was it for you?
Do you know what's terrifying? I got married not knowing how to love myself. Mm, I learned about this after I got married.
Facts.
And I'm so happy that we chose to do it. I don't practice it perfectly at all. You know, we're human. We all have moments of insecurity. We all have moments where we're like, oh, if I just do this thing, then those people will think that about me. But having this toolkit now gives me a benchmark to come back to whenever I stray off the path. So I'm getting much better at loving myself. Like, something that I am really, kind of wary of is like social rejection.
Mm.
Just historically, like, I would feel really silly if I like said something dumb and people laughed at me, or if I like stood out, like particularly at school or like secondary school and stuff. But now when I say something silly, I'm able to laugh at myself. I'm able to have like a chuckle at myself and be like, oh, that was really like silly thing you just said, rather than, oh, I hope people won't judge me for that. I hope people won't like reject me socially for that. That, like, being able to laugh at yourself is a form of self-love. It means that you're not judging yourself and you're not taking life too seriously. I didn't historically used to look after my health that much. I'm kind of one of those people who's just kind of naturally quite slim, or looks naturally quite slim. Kind of eat what I want and like whatever, but that doesn't mean that I'm healthy. So looking after your health is a form of self-love, because you're saying to yourself that you want your body to work properly. You want to live, you know, as long a healthy life as possible. And so that's why I'm running London Marathon in a month's time. And I've been training towards it, because I know I'm not a natural gym goer. But when I book in a race, that means that I'm sleeping right, more likely to sleep right, more likely to eat right, more likely to exercise. So please, if you're listening to this, try to cultivate the habit of loving yourself. No one else is going to do it for you.
I'm so glad you brought that up. So glad you brought it up. And as you were saying it, I was like, oh, I can relate with this so much, because when me and my wife got married, we started doing marriage counseling. It was huge for me. And she was like, oh my God, have we got problems in our relationship already? We've just got married. And I was like, no. No one knows how to do this. I want to hear.
Yeah, we're all making it up. All making it up. And it's like, just because you're going to the gym doesn't mean you've broken your leg, right?
Mm.
Just because you're seeking counseling doesn't mean anything's wrong. We are very, very early on in human understanding of how the brain works and of how psychology works. And so, and that's why, like, when we talk about mental health, it has this negative connotation of like something is wrong with your mental health. That's why we're talking about mental health. Mental health is just like physical health. You have it.
Mm.
It can be good. It can be bad. You can maintain it, like your physical health, or you can wait till something goes wrong and then you can do some firefighting. I'd much rather maintain it. Prevention is far better than cure.
Facts. And on top of that, like, which kind of ties really close to what we've been saying throughout this entire podcast, is when I started learning about finance and being really curious about it, it was part of one of my steps to loving myself and caring about my situation. And I think they kind of all link in. You can't just focus on one section of your life. I've always seen it as a triangle. You've got your time, you've got your money, and you've got health. When those three things are, you know, fully jacked up, you're winning, but they're never always perfect. It's trying to balance those three things. I can definitely see how that kind of has tied in to kind of like my life, and obviously from what you've said, which is, I'm so glad you shared that.
Yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned that as well. So you've got a triangle. My life, I organize my life into four buckets.
Okay, cool.
So I've got my personal life, like my relationships. I've got my home and family life. I've got health, and I've got my professional life. So personal, professional, home and family, and health. And in all the different systems I use, be it my to-do list, in like my Google Drive folder, in my documents, like everything is in those four like folders almost. And I actually, I mean, I haven't actually said this publicly out loud, but I score these four areas every month as well. I'm like, okay, on a out of 10, like how do I feel like my work life is going? And then I'll like journal and I'll be like, oh, right, this is what sucks about it. What can I do next month to fix it and stuff? I'm very big on introspection and reflecting and kind of keeping tabs on things because it works. Like, it might sound really like animatronic or something, but like what gets measured gets managed at the end of the day.
Yeah, completely relate with that. I can feel my wife rolling her eyes going, this guy is exactly like you. Spreadsheets on his entire life. I'm exactly the same. But I do agree. I don't think everyone needs to be as crazy as us and have Google spreadsheets and everything. But it's just that kind of self-awareness of you're just checking in on yourself and making sure you're kind of on track to where you want to be. But also, like you said, maintaining that level of my health is pretty good. Yeah.
I think, I don't want to be banging this drum because I do understand that there's people out there like your wife who either aren't into this side of things or have like a natural and intuitive way of keeping track of different parts of their life. The reason why I have all these tools and systems is because I'm rubbish at it and stuff. But don't forget that like almost everything that we use is a system. So you might not want to use a certain type of system, but you don't get to just be like systems are rubbish because English is a system, yeah? It's like a language with rules that we use to communicate with each other. The division of time into hours, minutes and seconds, days, weeks, months is just an arbitrary system that we use to coordinate on meeting people and sending out delivery packages. And like, we could just be like, yeah, just there's just one day. It's just called time. Have fun.
Yeah.
We're floating around in space randomly at the end of the day. So yeah. I don't want to put any particular system on a person, but systems in and of themselves are useful. We use them all the time.
Yeah. I only really, it's funny you mentioned that time thing, it just brought up as well. Out here in Bali, obviously the typical kind of time frame is like a year, isn't it? 12 months. In Bali, they don't work like that at all. They obviously,
really?
Yeah, I know, right? They have, it's every 6 months. They have like their own Christmas every 6 months, which is so bizarre. So I was like, oh, how old am I? I was like, oh, I'm 20 years young. And for them, it'd be like 40 years because they do it every 6 months. Obviously, when they have like tourists and stuff, they know the year. But if you're like January, February, they're like, what moon is that? I've got no idea because they do it off the moon.
Wow.
It's crazy. It's completely different to how the Western world does it. And that just proves like everyone is just working off different systems. But yeah, that's really interesting. Any closing thoughts, my man? Anything you want to just make sure everyone hears? What's the main thing you want people to know from this podcast?
So we've talked about a lot of the short-term stuff around the cost of living crisis. If you're living paycheck to paycheck, seeking out support, taking stock of your finances, being kind to yourself, not judging yourself. I think I just wanted to finish off by saying that kind of inflation, which is a thing that a lot of us are struggling with at this point in time, it isn't normally at these crazy double digit figures that it is. Over the last 30 years, inflation has averaged 2%, which is actually the government target for inflation, the Bank of England's target for inflation in this country. So inflation is something that isn't going to affect your finances next week or next month or even next year. It's something that affects your finances over a really long time period. Put into perspective, a rise in 2% inflation over the past 30 years compounded means that things today are nearly double what they used to cost in the 90s. So the way that you protect your finances over time and that you remain resilient over time is by investing your money. This can be into a pension, this can be into a stocks and shares ISA, but that's like the main way that you build wealth and your finances over time. So I know that things in the present moment are quite like immediate for some people, but it's also important that you don't take your eye off the long-term financial habits, which will help you to build your wealth as well. And just keep learning. Just keep learning. I learn new stuff all the time. I'm sure you do as well. Read books, you know, listen to the news if you can bear it. Find voices that you trust. And of course, I come check me out. I'm at Mr. Money Jar on most social media platforms. I'm always happy to speak, always happy to answer questions.
Absolute pleasure, my man. Thank you very much for joining us on this podcast. For everyone listening, I hope you've learned a lot. I definitely have. I'm definitely going to be staying in touch with my guy over here. There's so much we have in common. It's really interesting, actually. Yeah,
it's really interesting.
It's so cool. But yeah, anyway, guys, thank you very much for listening for today's podcast. I've been Cameron, and we'll see you in the next one. See you later.
Take care. Dope Black Podcast.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.